Hey everyone, this is Scott Jones, Athlete on Fire, Becoming Ultra. This will be on both of the podcasts. Don't put as much stuff on Athlete on Fire, although I've had some amazing interviews lately, and I'm changing kind of what Athlete on Fire means to me and how I'm going to approach it. It's going to be more about just the authenticity of what the audio in a person's life sounds like, and that life will be mine a lot of times, but it'll be the interactions that I have with people around me that I really love and believe in, and athletes that I get to meet through my professional work and otherwise. So I am doing something, to say the least, a little different on this show. And my grandfather, there's been a lot of death, I guess, in my family in the last few years. In the last 6 years, every year I've lost somebody in my family. It was 6 years ago, I had all my grandparents, and then my mom's mom died, then the next year my mom's dad, then the next year my dad, and then a year and a half off my mom's best friend passed, and then my dad's mom, and then just a few weeks ago my dad's dad. I've lost an athlete that I was really close to, who's 23. You know, people go through this stuff. There's no victim mentality or anything. It's just a matter of fact, and just learn how to deal with those things. It's very interesting to me because everybody's dealing with it, and a lot of people don't deal with it in the most productive way. I guess we're all different. I'd love to find a way to get people more active to deal with grief, because it's such a good outlet, and scientifically and anecdotally and all those things. So I really believe in audio. I interviewed my dad for the first episode ever for Athlete on Fire. I still have that audio. It's amazing. Because I started a podcast, every time I called my parents back in Florida or West Virginia, wherever they were, I would be able to, my software automatically recorded, and I didn't know I had all these recordings. And my dad, 2 years after my dad passed, I found them all. I was like, oh my gosh, this is like 3 hours of unheard audio with my dad and my mom and my kids when they're really young. So it's just powerful. And it takes me back to a place better than even video does in a lot of ways. So I've actually spoken the eulogy at two funerals in the last few years, and then written a couple. It's always an honor, I guess. But I actually had the chance to record my grandfather's service, and I didn't get everybody's speaking parts, but I'll kind of tell you what you guys are about to listen to. And the reason I'm sharing this is because I just believe in the power of legacy and the fact that when the people that we've looked up to our whole life, our grandparents and our dad for me, and you know, my uncle, I was joking with him, he's a patriarch now because he's the oldest man in my dad's side of the family, and those are honors and titles that we all take seriously in my family, because we've been really tight for so long. But I think just passing down stories of the people that we love is the way to keep them alive in our hearts, and that's really good coping. Even doing a show like this is very therapeutic for me, so I'm happy to do it. So what you guys will be listening to, probably through a little bit of your own tears as well as my own, is a little place called Hurricane, West Virginia. My grandfather moved from the farm that he loved. He wanted to own property in West Virginia his whole life because he grew up really poor. He got his mechanical engineering degree, went to school, one of 9 kids. A couple of his siblings passed away at birth. Only one of them all to get the education that he got, and or the first, I would say. I think one or two of the others got the same education. But anyway, just powerful stuff for him to come from poverty and live the life that he lived was pretty crazy. But my grandmother was getting sick of living in the country, so they moved to this little town called Hurricane. It's in between Charleston, West Virginia, and Huntington, West Virginia. Huntington is where Marshall University is, where I went to grad school, got my degree in exercise science. Charleston is the capital town. It's right in between those two on Highway 64, Interstate 64. You know, it's not so small. It has all of your modern conveniences, but it is Appalachia in a lot of ways and unique in that way. And the house that he lived in, or until a couple weeks ago, my aunt lived right down the street, and she was able to help him and my grandmother out a lot. My cousins are 15 and 19, and they're able to help out a lot. So I just wanted to paint a little fun kind of picture of what happened when we went back. I went back there. There's no way to fly in West Virginia unless you want to go broke. It's like $1,300, $1,400 to fly into Charleston. So I usually fly into like Columbus or Charlotte or Pittsburgh. and for a few a few hundred bucks, and either rent a car. And this time my sister and brother-in-law came up, and we were able to hang out and go ride some scooters in town, which is a completely different and funny story. But everybody in my family got to my grandfather's house about noon on Monday. The service was on Tuesday. It was going to be a quick turnaround. We're moving couches around and trying to empty out some of the heavy stuff. He was born to a poor family. He did not waste anything. He did not throw anything away. He was very resourceful in that way. So we're helping organize some stuff. We're looking through papers. I found the newspaper from 1969 when we landed on the moon. I actually brought it home. I'm going to have that bad boy framed. And me and my cousin, who's 31, 30, brother-in-law, year younger than me, we had heard of the whiskey stash. So we wanted to find the whiskey stash. So I finally found the whiskey stash. And we passed it around the family, me and my brother-in-law and my cousin and aunt. My sister even got in on it a little bit, and we just passed around old school style until that bad boy was gone. That was just kind of a funny thing. So we had a good old night that night, talking about my grandfather and telling stories, and cousins I don't get to see very often were there. So it was just a fun night. So Tuesday, we walked two blocks down the street. We're on this little main street, small town America. Went on a run in the morning with my brother-in-law Jake, and so we get to the service, and we're there at 11 o'clock for the social part. I thought that the service started at 11, so I was getting antsy. So me and my mom went for a little short walk, and then we came back, and what you guys are about to listen to is part of the service. It goes until my uncle kind of hilariously accidentally hits the microphone and it falls, and then it just turns off. But I'll talk about that after the end of this audio. And you guys, there's no benefit than to just give you a little view into what this day was like. And I know a lot of my family who don't live and weren't able to make it to West Virginia will be able to listen to this and maybe smile a little bit. So you're going to listen to my cousins, Abby and Joshua Jones, Abby Stevens now. She married John, who spoke at the wedding as well. At the service as well. They're recently married. That's why I said that. And Abby is the female voice playing guitar, and Joshua is playing piano along with some of the songs that she played. So right away, you're going to hear those two singing. My aunt comes on to have some words about my grandfather. Then I go ahead and speak the eulogy. And then they sing another song, I believe. I'm not sure if I edited that out or not. And then my uncle finishes, and then mic drop. So that is what you guys are about to listen to. Hope you guys enjoy. Oh,
I think everybody knows I'm Sarah. I'm Dad and Ralph's daughter, and I'm just opening up the forum for people to come up and share anything they want to share about my dad. And I wrote this big because I don't want to wear my glasses. I don't want to cry with my glasses. But I prayed about what I wanted to say about my dad. There's so many things I could say. I think everybody that here knows there's just so many areas that he's touched people's lives. But people are going to think I'm weird, but I want to talk about his hands because he had the best hands in the world. But my dad's hands were his tools. They were his instruments. They represented power, strength, generosity, authority, protection, hospitality, stability, hard work, expressive. He laid hands on those that were sick and prayed. But most of all, he lent a helping hand to anyone. And I just want everybody to remember that. He had the best hands in the world. I don't know who's next. Anybody wants to come up?
So we have a lot of family that can't be here. I record a lot of stuff. So if you guys would like a copy of any of the audio stuff, Sarah will have it afterwards. And I have some stuff. A lot of you guys I know are my family, but I really don't know you. And for that, I will blame my passion for the western part of this country. This is going to be hard, for sure, but it's going to be more weird than hard. I've been blessed with confidence from my family to do and say things in front of people sometimes when it's harder than it needs to be, and I'm proud to do that in any situation. So I wrote this eulogy. It's the second eulogy I've written in the last month. The first one was for a 23-year-old athlete that I worked with who passed away. And just seeing the juxtaposition of someone lives their life when they're really young versus someone who's lived a long, fruitful life is powerful. I think it speaks to how important living every day is for us all. I was telling my mom, like, writing something down and then saying it are two completely different things. It was great when John came up here. I didn't recognize him because his glasses weren't broken. So when we played basketball last Thanksgiving, we were getting after it, man. Like, I didn't have basketball shoes on, nothing. And I was cutting hard and feeling pretty confident that I had to beat the newest member of the family. If Josh could have just made half his layups, it wouldn't have been close. But we still, I believe, won some of those games. Make your layup, son. You're 2 inches from the hoop. It's okay. So I'm working myself into what I've written down here just so I can get comfortable. I don't know if you guys were getting as car sick as I was looking at this. It's making me a little loopy. So I have some confessions today, and I have some lessons. The confessions are for Mama, who passed. And Papa, and my dad, and this little dog that I ran over about 5 years ago. So I need to confess. If there are any members of PETA in the audience, this is going to be rough for animal lovers for the next few minutes. I was driving my dad's F-150 up camp at the cabin that Papa Ralph built and kind of bought for the family to spend a lot of time at. And we were all there. It was the first time I think we were all there in a long time. And I went to McDonald's to get a biscuit. I was up before everybody, and I wanted some coffee, and I wanted some, and some people wanted to take an order. We usually made breakfast and everything. And I'm pulling in. I'm listening to some song. Windows are up. Turn the corner, listen to some country song, I think. We're in West Virginia. I was listening to a country song. And I pull in. I don't hear anything. And I look up, and it's like from a war movie. My sister goes down to her knees. No! Screaming at the top of her lungs. I still hear the song. I don't hear anything else. Jake's like, hands are up in the air. My dad's like, what happened? And I open the door, and it's like a movie. I open it. You killed Chachi! So that dog was buried in no less than 30 seconds. Congratulations, Jake. That's the quickest burial. But I would like to say I'm sorry for killing that dog. I made a joke 10 minutes later, and Anne-Marie said, that's too soon, Scott. That's going to have to simmer. So there's one confession. I did kill a poor defenseless animal that had bad habits of chasing cars. I think I feel responsibility, unfortunately, as I get older, to pass down stories of our family, right? That's what's important about family. If you want the legacy of someone to live on, you got to tell their stories. So there's some fun stories and there's some serious stories. These confessions are for Mama and Papa. I didn't get to come back from Mama's funeral. I got to say goodbye to her when she was in hospice. But I did not get to come back. And why do I remember the number 111043? The reason I remember the number 111043, because when I was in college at Concord College in Athens, West Virginia, a few hours south of here, my lock was 111043 for the mailbox. Kids under whatever, that's a mechanism that we used to get into things. So every month, my grandmother would send me a $50 check. I was poor. I mean, that meant the world, but I think that's why that number stuck in there, because she would send money to a lot of the grandkids without telling Papa, I'm sure she did it for a lot of us. It was just really sweet. I told the family I was going to talk about my grandmother a little bit too today. Me and my grandmother, we were at their farm in Buffalo when I was 12 years old and probably saw one of the coolest sunsets of my life. It was like if you looked at a peace sign, one third of the sky was pink, one third was blue, and one third was gray. And it's not that the sunset was beautiful, it was that it was so beautiful to her that she had to tell the story every time I saw her. So I think those are signs that we can take with us. On that same picnic table, a year or two before, and I'll say this confession, I know it happened to some of the other grandkids, I have nothing against speaking in tongues, I just don't have that language in my heart or anywhere in my body. And Mama Nat worked on me to speak in tongues for about 45 minutes. So all of a sudden, I spoke broken Spanish, French, and gibberish, faked it for 10 seconds, and got to go get some ice cream. All right. So I did do that. Mama, I apologize. Wherever you are, I know of some other grandchildren who are too, I won't say gutless. They're just not going to share it. And I have another confession from my grandparents. I was visiting them. I had my ACL reconstructed when I was in grad school at Marshall. I was staying with them. Their house is two blocks down from here. Staying with them laid up in a big brace in significant pain. And I told them that I had to get back to my apartment to study for school. But the reason I left is because they wouldn't stop bickering for 4 hours. So I think they figured that out. Mama Nat, just such a sweetheart. After my dad died, Shannon, the photographer, she took a really cool picture of him. And every time we would come over, she swore that he was... She swore that he's smiling at her and winking at her, and well, I don't know if he's waving at her, but it makes me happy to think about them in that way. I'm supposed to go last. I'll get to the good stuff here in a second. When I was probably 8 or 9, my parents were driving away from my grandparents. After vacation, we'd come up for a couple weeks and spend time with both grandparents. It was probably one of the coolest things my parents did with us because we lived in Florida at the time. And I remember leaving one time and literally thinking that the world was about to end because I was driving away from my grandparents, and I bawled for, it felt like hours, probably 5 minutes. But as a parent now, I left my son for a work trip. My work trips are pretty fun. I go to mountains and video people running. It's not really that, it's not like a stressful thing. But my little four-year-old is after my dad died, so he was probably three at the time. He could not imagine that I was coming back. Sarah and Steve, your dad is always your dad. I think the perspective of having kids helps you realize the finality of this. But you can't feel this much if you haven't been given this much. And it's just a powerful thing I wanted to share. So, to Pawpaw, work is a gift. He never was not working. Even if he wasn't working, he would call it working. And it was just a mentality ingrained from his childhood, I believe. It seems like they had it pretty rough. I'm just going to guess from the stories that I heard from him and his family. Someone to come from his background and go get a mechanical engineering degree is more than inspiring. With the tools that we have today, there's no way that anyone should not educate themselves in the same way that he did. He worked when he was at vacation at camp. He worked when he was working at the plant. He worked on holidays. When I was a kid out at camp, thank you very much. When I was a kid out at camp, he would work, and he would get home from work, and you'd hear him coming up the driveway, the long gravel driveway, and Mom and Dad would be like, "Papa's here, it's time to get to work." So we were going to go work some more. I was 8 years old, 10 years old, whatever. You could tell that he felt guilty not working because he knew how hard he had to work to get out of his initial situation, which is pretty inspiring. There's one more before I get to my final lessons off of these confessions. My dad and Papa Ralph had a moment that my dad shared most of my life when he was going through cancer. He was given 3 months to live, and it was rough times. And this is a story I'll probably tell my kids a million times, and I think if anything resonates, it's the kind of interaction they had with his son that day. They were sitting out at the farm, and I think my dad was on a hammock or something like that, or laying down. I can make up these stories now because they can't confirm if it's perfectly true. But basically, my dad was really scared. My dad was a monster of a man. He's a big, imposing figure, but really bigger heart. And the way that my dad always told the story is he was scared. And he didn't know if he was going to make it. And Papa Ralph wasn't really one for extra words. At least back then he wasn't. I think he probably loosened up a little bit as he got older. But my dad asked him if he thought he was going to make it, and he just looked at him and said, "Yeah, of course." And he said, "Why?" He said, "Because you never give up." And I think that's just such a cool story that my dad and grandfather shared. So I wrote this on the airplane. Hopefully I can read it. And then I'll wrap up, and then hopefully a couple of you guys have built some guts to come up here and shout about Grandpa. Pop on. All right. So this is going to be weird. My grandfather has a few skills. He was an engineer. He was tireless. He was very skilled. He was passionate. He was a good athlete back in the day. And all of that led up to, unfortunately, the death of some innocent animals. And we're going to talk about those animals today. So to feel loss, there's got to be some kind of gain. Since we're here talking about this, we're going to go a little deeper and learn something from everything that has transpired in some of these life lessons. Lesson number one, Groundhog One, we'll call him. Groundhog One, back in the day, he was eating up Papa Ralph's and Mama Nat's vegetables on a very consistent basis out at the farm. Papa left early in the morning. I don't remember when. It seemed like 5 o'clock or earlier. To get to the plant, he'd come back late, he'd work around the farm, go to sleep, do it again. Pretty tireless guy. And Groundhog was getting into his vegetables. And on a work night, he decided he'd get a light, a spotlight out on the vegetables. sit down in a chair and sit there with his shotgun until the groundhog came out. So I guess the story, as the story goes, or at least how I remember it, 3 a.m., he sat out there until 3 a.m., and the little guy came around the corner, he blew his head off, and went back to sleep and went back to work. So I think the lesson in this one is that patience and skill equals success. All right, we're going to talk about a squirrel. This happened 2 blocks down the road. Pawpaw, before they chopped off the giant tree in their yard, had this obnoxious squirrel that was on the roof all the time. And he was standing on his porch before they turned it into an indoor area. And he had a file like you would sharpen a knife with. And one end of the file is pretty sharp. And Pawpaw is a southpaw. He's a lefty. And this little squirrel that was driving him crazy crawled halfway up the tree from here to my Uncle Steve, maybe a little further. He took his sights on it and straight out of Gangs of New York, drilled that thing right in its head, stuck it to the tree. Pretty brutal for the uninitiated. But the lesson in that is that confidence and skill equals success, because you've got to have some confidence to even try that. We'll call this Groundhog Number 2. Groundhog Number 2 was messing with his beloved dog. And if you know my grandfather, the fact that he had a little dog named Putty that he loved more than life itself is a testament. So Groundhog was messing with Putty Dog out in the driveway. He took a pole, a 15-foot metal pole, and ravished the animal under the car for about 10 minutes and buried it 5 minutes later. And the lesson from that is that misplaced anger is a waste, but anger and skill equals success. And the last story is an epic story, and this was from my college days. The last story is a crazy one. It's probably the best lesson. Papa and Mama, they lived out on the farm for most of my childhood. Early in my college days, he wrote us all the time. Like, so girls, we used to write letters back in the day. Okay. He wrote us all the time. People used to write letters back in the day. He sent me a harrowing tale on one of these letters. I got to tell you about this. The story goes like this. He was sitting on the front porch out of his farm, and there's a giant, imposing figure that stood about 100 feet away. His nerves were high. He was at alert. He grabbed his gun. He nervously got up for the shot. He'd never taken aim at such an imposing menace. He took a deep breath, and boom. What happened next is what legends are made of. It was a perfect shot. Did the menace drop? Well, no. It was a freaking telephone pole. Did anybody get hurt? No, it was a BB gun. But back to my letter. It was a Post-it-sized piece of paper. It had scotch tape on top of it. Underneath the scotch tape was the BB that he shot that day. A picture of the house. So he actually drew a picture on this little piece of Post-it. He had a picture of the house, he had a picture of the telephone pole, and the path of the BB gun back to where he taped it on the piece of paper. I think I still had this at home, but I didn't think to bring it. He shot it, and a couple seconds later, it landed in his lap on the porch. It was a perfect shot, indeed. So the lesson for this one. There is a God, he has a sense of humor, and Ralph Dale Jones, Pawpaw, is the type of man that deserves every second of eternity with him. And that's my grandfather. Thank you, guys.
Well, anybody in this room that knew my dad knew he was a pretty unique guy all the way around. I'm going to close the service. I think the honor guard's here. So once I'm really not sure how to do this. I think I'll go ahead and close the service, and then we'll have the honor guard do what they do. But the reason I say he's unique, everybody here knows that for sure. And everybody has known him for the last 10 to 15 years knows that he rarely ever, even inside a home, if there were fluorescent lights, he had sunglasses on. You see most of these pictures.
All right, so mic drop. He accidentally hit the thing. It wasn't a big deal. I feel like he felt like it was a big deal, but it really wasn't. It was the last thing I cared about. But he was about to talk about my grandpa. would always have sunglasses on. I think his eyes just got sensitive when he got older. And so my aunt went and bought a bunch of sunglasses at the dollar store, and everybody put on sunglasses for the last piece. And it was very necessary, because a few minutes after, the military dudes came in and they played Taps, which is just, man, if you can keep a dry eye listening to that play, and they folded the flag in honor and went and said some words to my uncle, and they were out. So that's how it wrapped up. There's not anything profound to say. He was a great man. The time that I had with him working on projects and learning how to do a lot of things made me a better man and a stronger person, and I will never, ever forget those lessons. So thanks for coming along. Appreciate you guys.